Hello and welcome to Outlier Parenting. I'm your host, Beth Feldman, and we have a special guest today who actually has a brand new book out called Baby and Toddler Basics. We have Dr. Tanya Altman. She's a practicing pediatrician and she's a frequent contributor to NBC's Today Show. And in this book, she's helping parents with friendly, straightforward guidance in an easily digestible question and answer format. So welcome to the show today, Dr. Altman.
Thank you for having me, Beth.
So here at Outlier Parenting, we talk a lot about how to help your children to motivate them to pursue the things that they love. But when they're born, I think it starts out as being a parent kind of having the instinct of, okay, something's up. Is there something wrong? Should I be concerned? And I know for myself, when I was a first-time parent versus a second-time parent, I was always super nervous the first time and I finally calmed down with baby number two. So can you kind of talk about that with like some of the new parents that come in and the questions that you find they ask that they really don't necessarily have to worry about as much as some of the really scary things that sometimes you miss?
Definitely. You know, I hear that a lot, and I have three boys myself. They are 12, 10, and 3. And I know that things were very different for me as well along the way, especially because with the first, I was a younger mom. And now I'm the oldest mom in preschool. And so, you know, what I worry about is so different from what all the other moms are worrying about that are 15 years younger than me. I think it's, you know, it's only natural that with your first, you tend to worry more because there is so much unknown out there. And, you know, there isn't really a baby manual when your baby's born that you get to take home, which is sort of why I wrote my book of the top 150 questions that parents, you know, tend to ask about newborns and toddlers. But I think everything is new, you know, with your first. And I do find that if you have a mom that is a little more high-stressed and worried about everything, that the babies do sense that. And they tend to sometimes be a little bit more on edge. Whereas if you have like the relaxed moms that are a little more laid back, you know, often the babies tend to be a little bit more of that personality and they might sleep a little bit easier and not be quite as, you know, fussy. So I think that how you are can definitely, you know, rub off onto your baby. And that's why we really tell moms, you know, it's so important to take care of yourself. And there are so many things that, you know, you don't have to worry as much about. And so I sort of try to divide it up when I see parents in my practice, like, these are things that I'm going to worry about as your doctor, and I'll let you know if you need to be worried about. But otherwise, I just want you to enjoy the time with your baby. I want you to nurse them, feed them, read to them, sing to them, spend time looking at them, get down on the ground, let them play and explore, and really try to get back to the basics, you know, be on the ground, be out in nature, get rid of the screens and the loud, hectic buzzing going around everywhere, and just enjoy the time.
And that's great. And I find that, you know, with the first time parent, you know, there are so many stresses. You come out of the hospital and if you're breastfeeding and it's not working for you, like everything is just, it's just filled with angst and there isn't that manual. So for that parent that has, you know, I know for myself, like I always struggled between, you know, do you breastfeed, the formula, when should I introduce it, how soon, has it changed over the years? Is it more still like, you know, how many months is it recommended for breastfeeding, and or can you mix? Like, at what point can you actually start introducing formula to a baby?
So, you know, I really try not to make any moms feel guilty about their decision. I mean, I've never met a mom that didn't want the best for their child. So I do feel that, you know, the research is, you know, is definitely there that we know that breast milk is best. And I find that for a lot of moms that are having trouble with it, or it's becoming stressful, or they're getting a lot of angst, that often meeting with a great lactation consultant, I have an amazing lactation consultant in my office, and that has really helped all of my moms be able to relax, be able to breastfeed well. And, you know, Polly's just good at calming them down. And sometimes if you're stressed and anxious, your milk won't flow. So often just relaxing and getting help with the latch can really make a difference in the long run. So the first thing I like to, you know, let moms know that it's okay. Babies aren't born knowing what to do. And often one or two sessions with an expert can really make a difference. And if for some reason, medically you can't, or maybe you adopted your baby, or, there's other issues going on, then luckily we live in a society where there are, nutritious alternatives. That may not be the same, but, they're trying to get as close to breast milk, as they can. And each case and each baby is different. But I do try to encourage moms to breastfeed as long as possible. I breastfed all of my boys until around a year of age. But you know what? With my second and third, I did have to start a little bit of formula, around 8 months, because I just wasn't quite making enough. I was also making sure that my babies were eating tons of healthy homemade baby food and all those, good things that I also write about in the book that they need. But every baby and every mom baby pair and every family unit is different. And so I really try to tailor my support in my office, based on what each family needs.
Well, that's reassuring, because I know, like, and because it's also, it's like if a mom is going back to work and trying to make sure that they have, the first couple of weeks with the baby, and then the trying to figure out how I'm going to freeze the milk and get it ready, and there was always all these different, like, I remember pumping in the back seat of a car, like on the way to another event, just to make sure we had it for my daughter. And it wasn't, it was a little bit, it was stressful. But I'm on the East Coast, and the other stresses that we face are the, we see the flu epidemic now is running rampant, and worried about our babies, catching any of the germs that are out there. So how, when a baby's first born, how many weeks is it, do you really need to keep them away from people, and especially this time of year?
That's a great question. I want to go back for a moment, though, and just address your pumping and let moms know that it is perfectly possible to exclusively provide your baby with breast milk, even if you go back to work. There are so many amazing breast pumps now and bottles that are, closer to the breast. And I, just like you, I pumped on airplanes. I pumped, in all sorts of crazy places, but it was fun, and part of the experience. So just because you're going back to work and you're very busy, doesn't mean that you can't exclusively breastfeed. But again, every family has to choose what's best for them. So now back onto the winter illnesses. I know my office is a zoo right now, as are pediatric offices all over the country and urgent cares and ERs. And this is really a record-breaking cold and flu season that we're seeing here in the United States. My advice on when you can take babies out and about sometimes depends on the time of year, because, I like babies to be outside and be exposed to the fresh air and then to incorporate into the family as early as possible. That said, we really want to protect babies those first 2 months from illnesses, especially illnesses such as the flu, illnesses such as RSV, things that can really cause trouble breathing in babies. So right now, I am being a little more strict with my newborns, and I'm telling the parents, please keep them at home if you can. Go for a walk in your neighborhood, but don't take your baby to your preschooler's birthday party at school. Don't take them to the shopping mall, if at all you can avoid it right now, because we're in the middle of cold and flu season. Whereas when it's summertime, I say put them in a baby carrier and take them out and about with you. But really, the first 4 weeks, and often the first 3 months, depending on who you talk to and how your baby's doing, if your baby gets a fever, which is a temperature of 100.4 or higher, you need to seek medical attention right away, because babies can get very sick very quickly, and we need to do what's called a full septic workup and really check their lungs, check their blood, check their spinal fluid, and make sure there is not a rapidly progressing infection. Now, again, every case is different. I had a 6-week-old with the flu in my office 2 weeks ago, and I did not admit them to the hospital. I did not draw blood on them. I knew it was from the flu, and the baby was breastfeeding well and otherwise looking good and no trouble breathing. And I examined them every day in my office and just kept in close contact with that family. I had that mom texting me every hour, and we were really on top of it. So, every case can be a little different, but often with babies under a month of age, if there is any fever, they do need a full workup, and you really should talk to your pediatrician if there is a temperature of 100.4 or higher, or your baby's having trouble breathing, or they're not feeding well, or they really look sick, or you have any concern. Don't hesitate to pick up the phone and call your doctor. That's what we're here for. And as a pediatrician, we expect to get those calls at 2 in the morning. And although we don't always love it, we want to help you. That's why we went into pediatrics. So don't hesitate. I would much rather have a mom wake me up and I say, you know what, it's okay, I can see you in the morning, than not call me because they didn't want to bother me, and then have their child get into a very serious, urgent situation with an illness.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, I remember, I'll still never forget, like the scariest moment was my son. He was, I believe, about 6 months old, and I had gone back to work, and my nanny called me and she said, "You need to come home. He just doesn't seem right." He was coughing, and then I had a preschooler at home, so of course he was exposed to things all the time. And we I remember getting in a car and racing home, and I went to my pediatrician, and he was the calmest pediatrician in the office. And I'll never forget this. And he looked at me and he said, "Mrs. Feldman, you need to take him to the hospital right now." And I just went, like, I drained. I was like, "What?" And he suspected he had pneumonia, and we took him immediately to the hospital, and it turned out he had bacterial pneumonia, so we had to have him treated immediately. But it was just that series of events that are forever, like, etched in my brain. My son knows nothing about it, but it's sort of like, or I mean, he knows the stories, but that moment of like, oh my God, oh my God, and you just go, you just are, it's kind of surreal. But it is that scary moment of you kind of, I was the parent that it's like, it's okay, he just has a cough. And that's not, let's say if they're not running a higher fever, but yet there's that persistent cough, is that also something to say, just bring the baby in?
So, that's actually a great question, and that's what my book is all about. It's these top questions that parents, are asking, like, if my baby has a cough, how long can I watch him at home? When do I need to come in? So if you have a newborn under 2 or 3 months of age, with a persistent cough for more than a few days, that is interfering with feeding, trouble breathing, any fever, anything worrisome, then of course see your pediatrician right away. But older kids might walk around with a cough for a week during the winter. So then my rules are usually that with viruses and normal coughs, as long as your child is eating well and looking good and not having trouble breathing, coughs will tend to kind of get worse for 3 or 4 or 5 days and then get better. So if it's been 4 or 5 days and they're not improving, if they have a fever that's lasting more than 4 or 5 days, if they have any signs of trouble breathing, if they're not looking well, if they can't keep down fluids, then yes, you need to see your pediatrician. And often the main reason is so we can listen to the lungs. And that's probably how your pediatrician identified the pneumonia, because he listened and said, okay, this is something serious. And based on your child's age and the way that they're breathing rapidly and look, they do need to go to the hospital for IV antibiotics. And we actually now have a antibiotic shot in the office that we can use when needed. Now, let's not forget that most of what kids get are viruses, and we don't want to use antibiotics unless needed. But because this cough and cold season has been so severe, I've had a few cases of pneumonia where 20 years ago I would have had to put them into the hospital. But now I can say, you know what? I hear the pneumonia. You're not having trouble breathing. You're looking okay. Let me give you a shot of antibiotics. Let me check you again tomorrow in the office and the next day. And as long as your child does not start having trouble breathing later on, the fever doesn't get worse, they're keeping down fluids and looking okay, this is something we can monitor as an outpatient, and you don't need to be in the hospital.
And the difference between the bacterial versus the viral, I think as parents we always are like, well, what's the, I know that with bacterial you need the antibiotics immediately, but can you just kind of talk about that?
Sure. So a lot of different types of organisms cause infections. There are viruses, there are bacteria, there are also funguses and parasites and a bunch of others. But most of the time, what we're dealing with children are viral infections, such as a cold, such as the flu. But sometimes you can get a secondary bacterial infection. So you might have a virus and your child might have a runny nose and a cough, but then on day 3 or 4, they might spike a fever, or they just might not get better. And then when you bring them in, we say, oh, now we see a bacterial ear infection. Now we hear a pneumonia, which probably is bacterial. Oh, now we look in their ears and we see a bulging eardrum that looks more bacterial than viral. And you know what? We can't always tell based on exam, because we don't stick a needle in their lungs anymore. We don't stick a needle in their eardrum anymore to check the fluid unless we need to. We kind of go more on the clinical picture and how the child's doing, and rely on other tests to help us decide, does this child need antibiotics? For instance, sore throat, when you come into the office, it might look like strep. I might have a scented strep based on your child's symptoms, their fever, their sore throat without cough and cold. But I'm going to swab them and say, is that a bacterial infection? Is it truly strep throat? Do they need antibiotics? And sometimes, some cases like the coughs, we don't know until we sort of watch them and see how they're doing a few days later. But when needed, antibiotics can really be life-saving, and we use them, when we need to. But I also like to encourage families to not use antibiotics unless absolutely necessary. And don't forget to take probiotics. You know, I recommend probiotics on a regular basis for all my families, just to help with that good gut flora that antibiotics can strip. And also, you need to eat whole grains. You need to provide your body with all those good prebiotics to help feed that gut bacteria. That's why breast milk's so important. It's full of prebiotics. You can't just take probiotics and then eat a junky diet. It's not going to go anywhere. You're just going to poop it out. It's everything together, the healthy diet, the healthy lifestyle, the foods with naturally occurring live cultures and probiotics like yogurt, and then the extra probiotics when needed that all go together to sort of create that healthy gut microbiome that we're learning so much about now, in the new research.
Yeah, it is really interesting. I have a daughter who unfortunately has bad reactions to the antibiotics. She has like bad gut reactions. So we're very, like she's very tuned in now of what she can and can't eat. But that's the scary thing is when a child takes the antibiotics and then is doubled over in pain. So, do you have that, if what about for the parent who has a child who, traditionally does have, maybe they were a colicky baby and they have, reactions that are not necessarily normal. What are the options for that particular child?
So, definitely colicky, fussy babies are something that we get a lot of calls for, in our pediatric office. And some babies are just a little bit more fussy, and they might have a little bit of colic that will sort of go away on its own. A lot of babies really respond to swaddling, shushing noises, white noise machines, comforting, and sometimes it can also be related to diet and what they're eating. So if the baby is breastfed, I might recommend gas exercises and burping before feeding to help get rid of some of that extra gas so that way they can really take a good feed and then get a good burp afterwards and hold them upright and then they'll do fine. Some babies might have reflux, and despite all of the comforting measures and the holding upright measures, they might still need some reflux medication. And some babies, especially if they're C-section babies or if they have been on antibiotics, they might need extra probiotics in their diet. There is some good data now out of UC Davis that babies aren't born with the same gut microbiome that they were 100 years ago. And I think, gosh, anyone would agree with that. And so in many cases, we do, provide extra, probiotics to breastfeeding babies and not breastfeeding babies as well, early on to help them with digestion and absorption of all the good nutrition in the food. So I think, again, these are good things to talk to your pediatrician about because every situation might be a little different. But again, in my book, I talk about the red flags to know, like, ooh, is this truly, an issue where you do need to call your pediatrician? Or does your baby just need some extra swaddling, some extra comforting, and they'll calm down sort of, on their own.
And I guess the other big thing is sleep. And I remember being completely bleary-eyed when my daughter was first born and like bouncing into like door, like it was bad because we weren't used to a baby being up every, 90 minutes. So what is your advice, of course, like for the new parent that is getting into this new world where they're going to be up every hour and a half? What is the, where's the trajectory where they finally cross over where they could get to them to sleep through the night?
So, you're right. Initially, babies do need to breastfeed or wake up and feed every, hour or two. But I find that if you get them feeding well, I usually tell my parents once babies have regained their birth weight. So when your baby's born, they're going to lose weight initially, then your breast milk comes in and they're going to start gaining weight. And so most pediatricians, once your baby's regained their birth weight, they will say, don't wake them up at night anymore. Start a calming bedtime routine. Swaddle your baby, soothe them, and try to stretch out those nighttime feeds. And feed them often during the day so you can start stretching out those nighttime feeds. And I think there are things you can do in the first month or two of life to encourage your baby to sleep through the night by 3 or 4 months of age. And some of that, some of the things I like to do are also let them learn to self-soothe. Around 3 months of age, babies need to learn how to put themselves to sleep. So you don't want to be nursing them or rocking them or pacifying them to sleep anymore. You want them to learn how to suck their hand, rock their head, just kind of relax themselves and get into a sleeping mode. That way, when they wake up in the middle of the night, if it's not time to feed, they know how to soothe themselves back to sleep. So depending on the baby, I usually have good success with getting them to sleep through the night between 3 and 6 months of age. But sometimes there are other factors involved. I had a mom call me that wasn't a patient of mine who has a 5-month-old and say, I want to hire a sleep trainer to help my baby get to sleep through the night. What do you recommend? And we tried everything, and it turned out that this baby did have serious reflux and needed to go on reflux medication. And nothing she was going to do and, no special gadget she could buy, would help calm her baby and get her baby to sleep right now. So we're going to treat for reflux, and we're going to give her a month or two, and then we're going to try to get him on a good routine sleeping through the night again. But I think regular routines, letting your baby self-soothe, making sure they're feeding well during the day, white noise machines, all these things can help set them up to be better sleepers. And I do feel that sleeping is one of the first skills that your child can learn to do on their own at a young age. And if you can teach them how to self-soothe and put themselves to sleep and sleep through the night, that will only make it easier when they're a toddler, when they're a preschooler, when they're an older child. Because most kids nowadays are not getting enough sleep. And that's a whole other podcast about screen time and getting things out of the environment to help them calm and meditate and be able to put themselves to sleep and sleep long periods at night. But I think what you do the first 6 months can definitely set your baby up for a successful life of good sleep.
Well, and then just one other thing I wanted to ask is also about the naps. I know parents that are super stringent about they're going to nap at 1 and 3 and 5 and whatever. And I was more like, wherever we are, if we're in the restaurant and she falls asleep, that's fine. If we're out and about, like we were much more of that mindset. Do you feel like you should have them on a specific schedule during the day so that it's, so that you can create that, experience to sleep through the night faster?
Well, babies do like routines, and it does sort of work well when they know what to expect and they know what's coming next, whether it's feeding time or nap time. That said, every baby is different. And I can tell you that with your first, it's often easy to schedule them because yeah, they're your only one. So it might work to, put them down for a nap every 3 hours during the day. But by the time that your second or third comes along and that baby is getting put into the car seat and going to pick up your older child from preschool and then getting taken to soccer, your routine might sort of go out the window. So like most things with parenting and raising kids, I usually say it's all the 80-20 rule. So once you get your child on a good routine and schedule, as long as you can keep it up 80% of the time, then the other 20% of the time when you're out late because, you're at a friend's house for dinner or your older child has a play and the baby gets off the routine, they'll be okay and they'll get back into their routine as soon as possible. But again, every child's different. So, some children are super flexible and can go with the routine and that's great. But once in a while, I'm telling parents, this isn't working. We need to have a month where we can get your child on a more of a schedule at home, and then you can start getting them out and about with your older children. So it really just sort of depends, on your family's lifestyle. My third child now has to be good with on the go because he is in the car getting schlepped around from soccer practice to band practice to band practice with my older two. And some days he gets naps and some days he doesn't. And that's just the way it works. And when he doesn't get a nap, he goes to bed an hour earlier at night. Mm-hmm. But you know what? It's working for us. If for some reason it was horribly not working for him, then I might have to reevaluate our family schedule and, get someone to help and really stay home with him. Which happened when he was a baby. He was born mid-January. It was cold and flu season and measles outbreak in LA. And I was planning on wearing him everywhere. And I had to get a babysitter to keep him home because I wanted to make sure that he was home and not out and about during that month of crazy cold and flu and measles outbreak. So again, sometimes you have to be adjustable and flexible as new parents. And that's sort of part of it.
Yeah. And I find it's funny between the two kids with me, my son was the one where I was taking him out and about everywhere and he has the more calm personality now. So who knows? And he's a teenager. So who knows if it was because he was kind of just moved about and it was just the go with the flow kid, but that worked. So But I wanted to thank you. This was so terrific. It was so much information. And if you are interested in buying a copy of Dr. Altman's new book, Baby and Toddler Basics, Expert Answers to Parents' Top 150 Questions, it's available for purchase on Amazon. And it's also on the American Academy Pediatrics website, healthychildren.org. So we'll provide the links to everything there. And Dr. Altman also has a website, drtanya.com. So you can check that out as well. And thank you so much for joining me
today. Thank you, Beth. This was a lot of fun.
All right.